Dear listeners, Sai Ram and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. Welcome to our radio program, Afternoon Satsang. This is a segment of Radio Sai's Thursday Live, hosted by Prem and Arvind from Team Radio Sai at 12:30 p.m. Indian Standard Time on Thursdays, only on Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. Today's episode was first broadcast live on 25th June 2015. Have a listen, please.
Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to this week's afternoon satsang. We begin by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. We welcome you for a very exciting journey in this afternoon satsang. Join me all in welcoming Brother Arvind. Sairam, Arvind.
Sairam, Prem, and I'm sure just like me, for everyone else also, this will be a very beautiful and happy topic, because humor is something that is the spice of life, if I can say so. It's not actually spice, it's the sugar of life. And humor seems to make a difference in any situation. Tough lessons get learnt better with humor. Difficult situations become easier to tolerate or cope with when it's embellished with humor. Now that is about humor. What to say about Sai? You know, Sai has done so much in each one of our lives. He has brought in light, he has brought in laughter, he has brought in love, he has brought in so much, and many of us will not even bat an eyelid while saying that Sai is life for us and life is Sai for us. So humor is so amazing, Sai is even more amazing. Then when it comes to Sai humor, it got to be amazing. And that is why I'm so excited and looking forward towards this satsang. So excited that I even forgot to offer our humble salutations at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear Swami, I'm sure you'll understand our excitement and enthusiasm. Please accept our loving salutations at your lotus feet. And as always, you guide our words, our thoughts and our deeds. As we broadcast from the spiritual center of the universe, the spiritual center of our universe, from the Radio Sai Global Harmony Studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. Dear listeners, when we speak of Sai humor, just before we begin, just want to make this clarification that this satsang will not be only about episodes which depict Sai's sense of humor. It will be a little more general. It will be any humorous episode in Sai's physical presence. And why we have taken up this topic is because most of the times when it comes to such humorous situations, we see the laughter and we see the humor that exists in the situation, but we often miss the light or the wisdom that exudes from each of these anecdotes and each of these humorous situations. So we thought that while enjoying the sweetness of laughter and the melody of laughter which these episodes elicit from us, we can also benefit from the tremendous wisdom and the tremendous transformation potential that they hold in them. So that will be both Prem and my endeavor in today's satsang, to examine those beautiful episodes with Bhagwan which bring out a lot of laughter but definitely a lot of light too.
Even as you're saying that, you know, when we look at Swami or when you look at any guru or master, distinctly, a master has to do two things. One is, of course, he has to impart the lesson. He's got to train spiritually or guide or whatever. That is one aspect. But before that, what comes is that the master has to attract the disciple. In our case, our loving Swami had to attract the people around us. I remember, you know, I was just listening to one TED talk. You know, we all are very fond of it, more for its brevity and, you know, how so much can be conveyed in a 19-minute, 20-minute talk. So I was hearing to one of the very, very early TED Talks. This must be in the early 90s, I think. So there was this man who was, for the first time, giving a talk in public. So he didn't know what to put in the talk. So he asked the organizers, so give me some tips. How am I supposed to give this talk? And they gave him a one-line answer. They said, just be profound.
Just be?
Profound.
Okay.
Oh. You know, it's like being profound seems to be a sign of knowledge and a sign of, you know, intelligence. So sometimes when we look at Swami, we are always looking for that profundity. Sometimes we are searching for some inner message. Probably Swami just is exuding fun and joy and laughter. Because as I said, to attract us is also a very important role which, you know, that personality came to play.
Mm.
But at the same time, if we get too attracted to that personality and feel that it is only for the attraction, we might even lose a lesson which is hidden there. So I think we're going to be going through both these kind of incidents, and maybe I'll take the first shot where, as I said, you know, we are always looking for the profound aspect of Swami, and sometimes it might just be not something which is what Swami is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one day Swami came out into the portico. And we all know that he used to stand there and the devotees on one side, there used to be students, and Swami used to just start talking. Swami came out, Swami was very angry. You know, Swami's eyes were red and big eyes was looking. He came to one devotee and he was sitting there, and this devotee was of a short stature.
Mm.
And maybe before we go on, probably we'll tell that as much as possible, we'll avoid naming people.
Exactly. Yeah, because the names are not important.
Yeah, it's not important.
It is the episode that is important.
Right. So there was this one devotee who was a little short in stature. And behind him, there was another devotee, and this person was very, very tall. Okay, and both of them senior devotees. So Swami came to them, and Swami started very loudly, so that even the students could hear, started shouting at these two devotees. He said, "You people are so bad, you're so shameless, senior devotees, and is this how you fight? You know, what example are you setting for the devotees who come here?" And Swami was very, very angry, you know, and we know when Swami is really angry, you know. Swami blurts out the words, sometimes he's searching for words, and sometimes he would call the wrong names.
Hmm.
Really a person with temper, you know, so only Swami can pretend that way, because we really know that Swami is beyond anger. So Swami is coming and saying this, he was very upset. He said, "You're all senior devotees, you spent so many years with me, I give you so much proximity, you come up to my room, I speak to you, but this is how you behave. Is this the example you said? See, young boys are here and this is what example." And these two devotees are looking at each other and they're wondering which is the episode Swami is referring to.
Hmm.
Then Swami turned to the other people, including the students, and said, "These two senior devotees," okay, and with an emphasis on the word senior devotees and close devotees, Swami said, "They are fighting in front of people like the Dobi. What will those people think of Swami? And is this all you've learned from Swami?"
Hmm.
And these two are literally, you know, surprised, what is going on here? And everybody is wondering what kind of thing has happened, and you know, Swami is so upset that he's coming out in the open and telling this. About 10-15 minutes Swami is going on this way. Okay, these people have done like this and it's so bad and indiscipline and all that. And finally Swami says, "And you know what these two have done?"
Hmm.
Swami looks at the short man and Swami says, "This man picks up one piece of cloth and he says, 'This is my pyjama,' and points out to the other old man and the other old devotee, and he says, 'You know what that man is saying?' He said, 'No, that is my short pant.'" That is my kacha, or whatever the one they wear.
One is saying, "This is my trousers," the other saying, "This is my shorts."
"This is my shorts." And it took a long time for the people sitting there to realize that Swami was actually building up a joke. And that's what I said, you know, because all the time we are giving a lot of importance to the profound aspect of Swami. Sometimes we miss that Swami is here actually to really have a hearty laugh, and that is one of the ways Swami attracts all of us.
Well, as you were narrating an episode which was building up so seriously and turned out to be humorous, I got reminded of exactly the opposite. A situation that was absolute fun and frolic, and suddenly in the end it turns serious and profound.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think to balance the scales, this also has to be narrated. This was a narrative of a story.
Okay.
Which Swami was doing in the tribe session, in a tri session. And I think there's a video of this also somewhere on the internet. I saw this, so beautiful it is. Swami is narrating a story, and that story is humorous, because of which Swami is unable to contain his laughter. So Swami starts saying as to how in a village there was this Ramayana Saptaham. For a week where they read the entire story of Ramayana, there will be a priest who will be reading through, not a priest, a scholar who will be reading through and telling the stories of Ramayana, and devotees gather to listen to the stories of the Lord. And Swami says in that there was this one lady, particular lady, who always used to come before time,
mm-hmm,
and sit right in the front.
Okay.
And Swami says that she listens to the entire story, she is engrossed, And the thing is, this scholar observes, this Pandit, he sees that even as he starts dilating the stories of Lord Rama, this lady is sitting there shedding tears. And from the beginning of the session till the end of the session, she is in a state where she seems visibly moved, shedding profuse tears. And the person who is reciting this Parayanam, he is himself so touched. He thinks that, you know what, I am not able to garner that much emotion, gather that much of feeling for Lord Rama as this lady is doing. This is so amazing. And Swami is sitting on the jhula and narrating this, and he says, you know, some people may come, some people may not come. Some people come for the first 2 days, the third day they don't come. But this lady is not like that. Whatever it be, rain or sunshine, whether it is a hot day or a cold day, whatever may be the situation, she is there from the beginning till the end. And everybody is impressed by her devotion and love for Rama. And at the end of the Parayanam, it is time for prasadam, Swami says. And for prasadam, there's everyone who comes because everyone wants the fruits of the labor. And prasadam is supposed to be like blessings from God. But the priest here has decided that the first person to receive prasadam must be this woman. Because of her interest, her devotion, she is the most deserving among all to receive. And so he calls out to her, he says, Amma, please come forward. And even as Swami is narrating this, a smile blossoms on his face. He's unable to control because there's something humorous that is going to come. And seeing him puffing up red and about to break into laughter, it is such a beautiful sight, such a sweet sight. Everyone is also getting ready to smile and laugh. And Swami says that this priest tells the lady that, see, Amma, you take the prasadam first. But tell me one thing. What is it that went through you? What was going on every one of these 7 days? From the beginning till the end, you're shedding such profuse tears, you're so moved. What was your experience? She says that that experience is overwhelming and she's unable to bear with that. And the priest says, that we can see. What experience did you have? What part of the Parayana meaning this recitation, right, touched you? Then the lady says that, see, it was not your Parayana, it was not your Ramayana. What was the thing is, in the priest's book, which he is turning the pages of, there is a black bookmark, a thread, a black thread that he is using as a bookmark. And the lady says that, you know what, I can't imitate the way Swami did, because Swami puts on the accent of a wailing lady. And he says, you know, I never could understand a word of what you were speaking, because what I saw was that black thread, and I was reminded of a similar thread that my husband used to wear around his waist. Her dead husband used to wear a black thread around his waist, and she's remembering her long gone husband, and she's just shedding tears. I know it's not so humorous when I narrate it, but when Swami narrated this, everybody in Thrai Vrindavan is laughing and rolling with laughter, and it looks like a situation that is so funny, so beautiful, so melodious to the ears. And then Swami brings in the serious note. Swami says, you know, our students are also like that. Whenever Swami is saying something, they are emotionally moved. They sit right in the front lines, they start shedding tears. But that is only emotion. They do not understand even a word of what Swami is telling them. And everybody is so serious at that moment. And today, when we look back at that situation, we realize that is what it is. While we enjoy Swami's jokes, we enjoy Swami's humor, we also, you know, it has literally happened. How many of us have actually sat in a darshan line during a bhajan looking at Swami and shed profuse tears, so moved we are, but have we listened to Swami's words? Just like that woman who kept crying because of emotion rather than absorbing the character of Rama, we too have sat there listening to Swami, shedding tears, getting emotional, but how much have we listened and imbibed his words truly? That's a thought to ponder about.
It's very true. And even as you're talking about the Thrai sessions, you know, many of these beautiful incidents which we remember fondly are from the Thrai sessions, because there's another video very similar to this one where Swami comes out and suddenly asks one of the students, sing a bhajan. What is the bhajan you sang this evening? Just after the evening bhajans is when we have the dry session. So Swami asked one of the students, what is the bhajan you sang this evening? And he sings one of the Rama bhajans. And there, I think he sings one line wrong. And Swami corrects him. Swami says it's supposed to be Shamala Komala. He sings
Raghava Sun. Mohana Megha Shama.
Right. And Swami,
Rama Rama Jaya Raja Rama Raghava Mohana Megha Shama.
So Swami says it is Shamala Komala Megha Shama. That's what you're supposed to sing. So Swami corrects him. And then very sweetly in the end, Swami adds, you fellows are thinking that Swami is sitting there, his eyes are closed, he's looking somewhere, he's not listening to us. I am listening to every word he's saying. You know, that's again, you know, Swami is saying that at no point I'm so lost that I'm not listening to you, I'm not with you. You know, that beautiful aspect, that's one thing which I always used to feel, because when we saw Swami in Thrai, when we saw Swami outside, there was a kind of an aura around Swami. You know, Swami was majestic. But the moment you stepped into Thrai session, or the moment you stepped into a Purnachandra session where you were close to Swami, or in an interview or in a bhajan hall session, you could see that automatically Swami was a little more mischievous than he was probably in public, this one. So it without your knowledge, it strikes you that the more I go close to Swami, the more I can enjoy the real fun part of Swami too. And the lesson, as you said, is always there. It can never go without the lesson. But that fun part, you get more of it the more you go closer. And automatically, as we always say here, the moment that desire to go close to Swami comes, automatically you have nothing but to do but to become a sadhaka, do all the sadhana, do whatever it takes. So that is a very beautiful way Swami attracts and teaches us too.
As you rightly said, though Swami makes it clear that more important than nearness is dearness, it's very, very difficult for us to separate dearness and nearness. We somehow feel that if we try to get near Swami, it will automatically grow dear also. And that is why, as you said, we start making all those efforts, we start doing sadhana, we become sadhakas. But again, you know, as you get physically closer and you get the chances to be, as you said, in a PC session or in a Thrai session, you get to see the fun side of Swami. There's also this danger that you forget who Swami actually is and start thinking that just because he's speaking to us, eating with us, talking to us, walking around with us, he's just one among us. I remember a personal incident. I was there for this. Mm-hmm. It was during a Thrai session when Swami had accepted a letter from a 5-year-old or 6-year-old boy. He was the child of one of the lecturers and he had come into the Thrai session and he was holding a letter and Swami took a letter from his hand. Swami then sat on the jhula and opened this letter. He read it for some time. A smile came over Swami's face. And then looking at all the students who were sitting right at his feet, he started saying, look what this boy has written. And Swami began to read out the letter. The gist of the letter was something like, Swami, I want nothing in my life. I just want to be at your lotus feet. I want to serve you in any way possible. Nothing else I require in life. That was the summum bonum of his letter. And Swami said, look how noble the thoughts of this boy are. And you are all here. What do? You keep asking all cheap, useless things. Look at the nobility of this boy. If all of you pray like this, that is the best thing that can happen. You must learn from this boy. Now, even as Swami is telling this, I am sitting there and I am thinking, Swami, those are not the thoughts of that little boy. I can't imagine a boy having such thoughts. You know, such lofty thoughts. I am sure his father or mother dictated these things to him. These were my thoughts. Then, you know, as if to reply to my thoughts, Swami looks and calls the boy and he says, boy, come here. So the boy gets up and Swami asks him, what's your name? This boy squeaks out his name. Some Sai, something it was. Sai! He squeaked out his name. And Swami said, how old are you? Swami, 5 years. He said, okay. And Swami said, what do you want? Swami asked. I felt at that time that, see, I was doubting the nobility of this boy. I was wondering whether this boy is capable of such lofty prayers. Mm-hmm. And here, Swami seems to be wanting to clear that doubt forever, because he is again asking that boy what he wants. So I thought that this will be proof. Swami will be trying to prove. This is all going on in my mind. But the magical thing was, I mean, the most hilarious thing was, when Swami asked him, what do you want? This boy tells, Swami, I've got a cold. Please take care of me. You know, he says that he has got a cold and he's holding his throat. The boy holds his throat and he says, I've been suffering from a cold, Swami, please cure me. And everybody burst out laughing and I also laughed aloud. And in my mind I thought, saw Swami, this is whom you were presenting as an ideal to all of us. Look at this, you know, he actually doesn't, he doesn't want to be at your lotus feet, serve you forever and all. He is as mundane and humane like any one of us. And this is how I laughed. And Swami also smiled. Swami called the boy closer, you know, and Swami gently stroked his throat and said, don't worry, your cold will go, and sent him back. That was the end of the episode. And I noted this in my diary also, saying that this was a time when Swami was made red-faced by a little boy, because Swami had such great expectations of that boy and that little boy let him down by asking such a trivial thing. And even as I was noting this in my diary, what struck me powerfully was, I laughed aloud at this boy, but how am I different from the boy? I might not ask Swami to cure my cough, but in the grand scheme of things, in the grand plan what Swami wants to give us, I am asking things that are equally foolish. Many times has Swami said, don't ask for anything from God, because you might ask for something that is far smaller compared to what he intends to give you actually. God wants to gift us the ultimate, the grandest things. But we are so stupid and foolish that we ask for little things. We ask for money, we ask for relationships, we ask for career. There was once a speaker who said, you know how we have grown? Since we were 6 years to when we are 60 years. When I was 6 years, I used to cry for a 60 rupee car. When I'm 60 years, I'm crying for a 60 lakh rupee car. That's all has been my growth. I've grown from crying for a smaller toy to crying for a bigger toy. When will we evolve? When will we be able to ask for something grander than curing our cough and cold? That is when I realized that, you know, though we might laugh, there's such a message. There's a reason why apparently Swami seemed to make himself red in the face, to show that you are all like this, as naive, if not innocent, as naive as that child, that theoretically you say, Swami, I want you. I want nothing else, Swami. I want you. Swami, I want love. I want faith. This is what we say theoretically. But guess what? Deep in our heart, we seek the same stupid things. We want actually money. We want actually relationships. We want actually power. We want actually career. These are the things that are there in the bottom of our heart, because those are the things that we actually seek, though theoretically we say that we seek God. Because, you know, we had this discussion on the concept of three zeros. When you say we want Swami, Swami will say, yeah, you want Swami? Really? Yes, Swami, we want you. Do you want Swami or do you want money? The minute that thing comes, you know, we go behind money. Some of us may be strong enough and we say, no, Swami, don't want money, we want you. Then maybe the next level, you want Swami or you want your relationship, your friendships and your influence. Oh my God, you know, at that time we turn off to our friends, to our relatives or our influence, our power, our self-respect. There are so many things that we value more than Swami, but theoretically we say we want Swami. This was another incident where I laughed really hard, but I think I missed the light at that point in time. Now that the light has come, I just offer it as a prayer to Swami, saying, Swami, please, let me never ever forget that truly you are the only wealth, you are the only treasure worth seeking in this life.
I think that's part of the learning process, because as I always used to think, it is but natural and it is but very easy to start loving Swami like this. You know, because he's so sweet at the end of the day. Because I remember one of our lecturers was saying, you know, it was that group of three or four students whom Swami used to call very regularly and talk about some projects which were going on in certain villages. Swami was building some schools and all that. So every day Swami used to call them and kind of review the progress of the project. And Swami had a file in which he was maintaining some of these material. And this group also had a file. So every now and then Swami would tell them that, you know, go to this school and find out what is the requirement and all that. So the file which Swami had a picture on top of it. Again, this picture was of a small girl sitting and praying. It was a small painting. Okay, a very, very innocent little small girl sitting and praying. And she's looking up in one particular direction upwards and there's a light coming from there. So on many occasions, Swami would show this file to the students and say, see what a beautiful picture this is. See this innocent child, see the innocence in her face. When you pray with innocence, then God's grace will come. See, that is the light. And it was very graphically, Swami used to narrate it. And And, you know, the students used to say Swami was looking cuter than the picture. Because he was narrating it so sweetly, the way he was saying. On one occasion, Swami gave his file to these students because they had to, you know, take a copy of something. So promptly what these boys did, they did a photocopy of that picture and they put it on their files. And they returned Swami's file the next day. A couple of days later, Swami noticed that these boys were having the same picture. And Swami looked at them and said, hey, how did you get my picture? And immediately looked at his file. And he found that his picture was intact. And Swami said, how did you get my picture? So then this lecturer got up and
he said, that would have been black and white, right?
Right, it was black and white. So he said, Swami, this is actually a photocopy of your picture. Swami said, what is that? So he said, no, Swami, we take this. There is a machine called a Xerox machine or photocopying machine, whatever. And we place it on that and then... And he was explaining the whole process and Swami was listening to it with such amazement. And it took a lot of time to convince Swami that something like that is possible. Imagine, that's the beauty, you know. So he's like, oh really, is that so? But still, is it, how will the same picture come? Will it draw again? Will it, you know, that is what, it is so easy to get attracted to Swami, you know, the way Swami is, so beautiful, so sweet, innocent. But I think the test is after that. When you say that, will you still choose Swami? How much is that attraction expressing itself in your daily life? You know, how much are you ready to live that initial attraction, that initial love? And that is when the testing period comes and that's when most of us actually falter. And the beauty is that, you know, I remember reading a quote sometime back and really fascinated by the quote. It said, God always loves a good joke. That's the first line of the quote. God always loves a good joke. And that's precisely why he loves you and me. Because we really, you know, make such a joke out of ourselves. Because one hand we say that we know Swami is God, we know that Swami is omnipresent, we know that Swami is the indweller. But all that we do is so contrary to that belief. I'm reminded of, you know, about 5 or 6 years back, maybe even more, I was talking to an elderly devotee who came to Swami in the 1960s. And one of the things he was narrating was, he was taking Swami around a South India tour. Swami, he was taking Swami to a certain towns in Southern India. And as part of the journey...
A road trip, this is?
Yeah, a road trip. Because he had a very good large car and he was driving Swami around. So Swami and a few other devotees would drive around in his car. So they had a stopover in this temple town of Tirupati. And those people who are familiar with Tirupati, there are two distinct towns actually, the lower Tirupati and the main Tirupati where the temple is.
Tirupati and Tirumala.
Right. So these people are stopping over in the lower town. So when they were staying there and they'd taken a guest house and Swami and these devotees were staying there. So three of these devotees one morning went up to Swami and he said, Swami, give us the permission, we'll just go have darshan and come.
Of Balaji, Venkateshwara.
Swami said, darshan of what? He said, Swami, you have come to Tirupati, we have to take the darshan of Venkateshwara. And you know, Swami, in a very casual manner, Swami said, but I am here. And these people, they said, yes, Swami, that we know, but Tirupati Venkateshwara, you know, Venkateshwara is different. Swami said, but you are with me, what do you want to go and see? You are having my darshan. You know, most of these devotees who are always in Parthi. So the only chance they get to visit such temples is when they go out with a... for a tour with Swami. So they say, no, Swami, Venkateshwara is Venkateshwara. You can't come to Tirupati and go away without seeing him. You know, it could be a blasphemous thing to do. So Swami said, okay, go and come. So these people go set out and they also decide to walk up the hill, which is supposed to be earning you a little more punya. So they join a group of devotees who are walking up. And I don't know whether you've ever done that trek.
I have never.
It's very interesting. Of course, it's a little arduous, but along with all those devotees, there'll be a lot of young men, women and children all going. And all of them will be chanting Govinda, Govinda and, you know, those typical chants which go along with a Tirupati pilgrimage. So they joined the group and everybody was shouting Govinda, Govinda, Venkateshwara and all that. So finally they reached the temple. And as you go closer to the temple, you know, the shouts and the vigors and all that increases.
Naturally.
Right? So finally they go to that Sanctum Sanctorum. It's a very small place. The statue is resplendent and beautiful, no doubt. But that Sanctum Sanctorum is very small. So as they go near, Govinda is increasing in their volume and this one. And finally they reach the Sanctum Sanctorum. And it's at the peak. Everybody is like having their namaskar over their head and shouting Govinda, Venkatramana, all that. Only these three people are silent. They're standing there in the sanctum and they're silent. they're looking at each other. Then finally one of them breaks the silence and he says, "Are you able to see anything?"
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the other two immediately say, "Yes, sir, we are not able to see anything. Where is the statue?"
Oh.
They are standing in the Sanctum Sanctorum right in front of, you know, Balaji Venkateshwara, and they are not able to see him. And they are sure that everybody else is able to see him because everybody else is shouting and, you know, chanting the name of the Lord and crying tears of joy. And they stand there for some time and they come away. And they knew what has happened. They knew that it is Swami's play. So silently come back to the guest house and they go about their job as though nothing has happened. But you know, Swami comes and says, "Hey, what happened? How was your darshan?" So they say, "Yes, Swami, very nice darshan. We had very good darshan." Swami said, "Really? You had darshan?" One of those people says, "Swami, where can we have darshan when you're here to spoil it like this?" Then Swami said, I told you I'm here, but you insisted to go there. I wanted to tell you that I'm here. Okay, and then they were so thrilled that, you know, Swami was there to prove it to them. So they said, "Thank you, Swami. We knew it, but the way it has been re-emphasized and reinforced now, I think they would carry it for a lifetime." But you know, Swami wouldn't stop. Swami said, "Now go and have darshan and come." And they said, no, Swami, now we have learned the lesson, we don't want to go." Swami said, "Nothing doing, you had the desire, now you go fulfill it and come. I wanted to teach you the lesson." So needless to say, they went all the way up, this time had the darshan of Balaji Venkateshwara, and then they came back.
You know, Prem, personally, I love this story that you narrated because I feel that I don't have any inclination to visit any holy place or any pilgrimage place in the world. I mean, in the sense, like, I've been to the Himalayan shrines of Badrinath, Kedarnath, and I've been to some other shrines. But it is not because I'm not finding my Lord and I need to find my God there. It's because I love the Himalayas, I love nature, and if Badrinath happens to be there, why not visit it? It is with that attitude. Because I sincerely feel that Swami is everyone, everything rolled into one. Some may say Allah is the supreme. Correct. That Allah has come as Swami for me. What you say is a different name. Just like you say, Neeru quenches your thirst. Somebody says water quenches the thirst. Somebody says Tanni quenches the thirst. Just by changing the name that you use to denote that liquid, water, doesn't change water. In the same way, the name that you use to denote that supreme principle, you may call it Allah, some will call it Yeshu, some will call it Buddha, you may call anything, it just doesn't change. And therefore, like what the people in that episode narrated, saying that having come to Tirupati, how can we go without meeting him, he'll feel bad. I mean, I really could not understand the rationale or logic behind that statement. But the only reason, because I'm sure if they have traveled around with Swami, they have been with Swami, there is one thing that can happen when we are close to Swami, which is Maya. That is, we may get deluded. We may get so lost in the charm and beauty of the form that we forget its reality. That is what the previous episode that I narrated emphasized. I'm reminded of another similar incident where all the students were with Swami in a bus going through one of the national parks, wildlife reserves in India. 2-3 wildlife reserves, Bandipur, Madhumalai, Wayanad, all these come on the way to Kodaikanal or different places in South India. So it was during one such drive that Swami had got off his car and was seated with the students in the bus. Swami said, "Boys, have you seen a white monkey with a black face?" He said. And then he said, "Look, it's going to come now." Of course, you know, it is there. It's called the Hanuman Langur. It is a white monkey which has a black face.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, within a short time, the boys were able to see a bunch of these monkeys, big ones, white in color with a black face. And they were, "Yes, Swami, there it is, there. And it's a kind of a thrill and a competition as to who is the first one who points out that monkey. So, but the first one who saw got excited and said, "Yes, Swami, as you had said, this is it." After these monkeys had passed, Swami said, "Boys, have you seen a black monkey with a white face?" Well, there is a monkey like that also in the Nilgiris, in that, in those forested regions. So now everybody again began to look out of the window as to who will be the first to find that. Once again, there was excitement as soon as somebody saw and said, "Swami, there it is. And everybody looks and everybody is again happy. Then Swami said, "You know what is most famous in these forests? It is the elephant. Now you'll see elephant. And now again, you know, elephant is too big to miss, and so everyone felt that they have a good chance of spotting the elephant first, so everybody is now watching, because now they're sure that whatever Swami says is the next thing that they're going to see. And as they're looking out, they search, 5-10 minutes pass, they're passing through, and there's no elephant to be seen. Finally, the driver halts at a place because he feels that there might be elephants ahead. And everybody looks in that direction. There are the trees that are moving, the shrubs that are moving, and yes, it is definite evidence that there is an elephant, but nobody is able to see the elephant. So all are craning their necks, straining their eyes, looking in the direction. Suddenly one of the boys shouts, "Swami, Swami, the elephant is there. I can see the tail, I can see the tail." And everybody is now trying to see the tail of that elephant. And, yes, I also see it now. Now I am able to see it. Yes, Swami, I saw it. It's almost like if you have not seen it, then you're somewhere lower in the scale. And once you see, you tell Swami, "Yes, Swami, now I also can see it." And this was the excitement that was in the bus. It was a very jolly situation, a fun situation. That was when Swami decided to, you know, give this lesson of how we become negligent, how we forget Swami because of Maya, because we take Him for granted. Swami said, "You know, boys, right opposite to your hostel, there is Sai Geeta. Sai Geeta's residence has always been opposite to the boys' hostel."
Right.
And Swami said, "That elephant is there right in front of you day in and day out. How many of you care to look at her? Some of you may look at her, but how many of you get excited seeing her? Very few. Almost none. But then, here you are getting excited seeing the tail of an elephant like Sai Geeta." You know, this is what happens when the avatar comes in your midst. You take him for granted and you forget the great blessing that has been conferred upon you. And that is the reason why people struggle, stand in queues, walk long distances, roll on the floor, shout, scream, undergo great penances for that sight for a moment. You know, I have never been to Tirupati, Prem, but what I heard is when you stand and enter the shrine, the crowd is so huge that there are 5-6 security officials who are posted there whose only job is to keep pushing out the devotees because there are thousands waiting to enter. So many times it so happens that as you enter, Govinda, and you're pushed out and you don't even get to see. Now here you are making so much effort, spending so much money, spending energy, struggling to have darshan, and when the Lord is available to you, when the Lord is available in your own homes, you neglect the Lord in your own house, in your own heart, and you struggle so much to look at what could be like the tail of the elephant when it comes to seeing outside. Therefore, you know, though this was another humorous episode, Swami showed the lesson, the light, along with the laughter in this episode, that we never should take God for granted. So excited we become on seeing an external manifestation of this divinity, a small external manifestation of divinity. We don't realize that that same divinity that lies every moment of our life in our own hearts, we neglect it day in and day out. We neglect the Swami in our hearts every day and get so excited when we see a speck of vibhuti on a photograph in somebody's altar. Isn't this being foolish? Isn't this taking Swami for granted?
I mean, the incident that you narrated is more of Swami giving a message, you know, through a very, very nice little incident there. But there's another occasion which was very, very similar to this, but here Swami gave the message and then added the wit to it, you know.
Oh, okay.
Where one Swami, I mean, just like how you narrated, Swami used to get into the bus and Swami used to go, the car used to drive ahead of Swami and Swami used to be in the bus. And most often in these long drives, you know, the car is traveling quite fast and you would see many devotees lined up on the road waiting to have a glimpse of Swami. So since the car is moving so fast, they will all be having flowers in their hand. They won't be able to see Swami really, but they will offer flowers to the car thinking that Swami is inside. So on one occasion, Swami was sitting with the students in the bus and Swami was showing boys the sight of devotees offering flowers to the car. And Swami was saying, "See, these people are thinking that I'm in the car and offering flowers to the car." And Swami, you know, was very quick to add that message. Swami said, "See, this is what happens with good company. Because that car has been in my company, see, even the car is being worshipped because it is Swami's car. So the car gets the, you know, the worship which is due to me, even though I'm not in the car." you know, the boys were very thrilled with his message, but immediately Swami added, but see my plight, because I am traveling with you boys, this is what happens with bad company. The worship which I am supposed to get, I am not getting because I am coming with you guys. You know, of course that's not true, because nothing can actually bring down the glory and, you know, and the divinity of Swami. But, you know, the Swami was very quick to add that, to lighten that mood, but nevertheless, the message was always driven in.
You know, when we remember and recollect such incidents, what becomes very clear is Swami had an impeccable timing in his communication and an amazing way of communicating. And humor just became one more tool to communicate. He knew how to use anger to communicate. He knew how to use humor to communicate. He knew how to use pathos to communicate. He knew how to use joy to communicate. Everything just became a tool to communicate. You know, as an aside, I was just reminded of this episode where how we people, you know, how we humans fail when it comes to such communication.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this episode when there was this devotee who was speaking in Swami's presence in Trai Vrindavan. And what he wanted to communicate was he was coming out of a rough patch.
Okay.
And he credited that entirely to Swami's grace. So he was actually in an exuberant state of mind, and he wanted to express his gratitude to Swami, and therefore he wanted to, you know, shower superlatives upon Swami. You know, like Rama might have done this, Krishna might have done this, but Swami is greater than Rama and Krishna. Rama might have done that, but Swami is greater than Rama. So this was the way his speech was going. And that was the time when, as I said, this is just an aside, when the communication error happened. You know, he wanted to, as I said, glorify Swami more than Krishna or Rama. And so he started sharing. He said, you see, in the Dwapara Yuga, Mother Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas, she prayed to Lord Krishna, Lord, please fill my life with troubles. And then, you know, Krishna is actually surprised. He asks, why are you making such a prayer? She says, Krishna, it is only in times of trouble, it's only in times of difficulties that I think of you.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, since I want to spend my life thinking only about you, I am making this prayer that please fill my life with troubles. So this is what the devotee narrated. And then he wanted to say, but that was Krishna avatar. Our Bhagwan is more compassionate than Krishna. I didn't even pray to him. He filled my life. He filled my life with troubles, Gelor. You know, everybody laughed and Swami looked at him, and that is when he realized what a classic blooper he had made. I was just reminded of this because when we look at Swami, look at his communication, it is so perfect. It is so direct. It is so heart to heart, and the message is always learned. How much we can learn from that in itself, because even though we pride ourselves as speakers, as orators, there are bloopers that we commit that show imperfection in our communication. And Swami says that you can get perfection in communication only when there is unity, when there is harmony in your thought, word and deed. Many times in our lives, you know, there is no harmony that exists between our thought, with our word and our deed. We think of something, we speak in another way, and we do something else altogether. And therefore, it shows even as disharmony in our communication. And though this is just a little aside, I think it is important to remember that perfection that Swami is because of the little things. Though perfection is not a little thing, perfection lies in little things. And by little things, I mean this harmony in our thought, word and deed is what will ultimately lead to perfection, to us being like Swami.
So dear listeners, we'll just take a quick break at this point. We come back, there are more stories, there are more little sweet ones to narrate. But we'll take a short break. Don't go away. There are more Sai humor stories to follow after this.
ప్రభుని నామ చింతనే సదానంతము రాజభక్తి లోకానికి శాంతి పర్వతం, ప్రభుని నామ చింతనే సదానందము, ఈ రాజభక్తి లోకానికి శాంతి పర్వతం. కదలీ ఖర్జూరం కమ్మణి చెరుకు రసం, కదలీ ఖర్జూరం కమ్మణి చెరుకు రసం, చక్కెర తేన పండ్లు సార విహీనాలు, ప్రభుని నామమే రాధకు మధురాహారం, ప్రభుని నామమే రాధకు మధురాహారం. నీ కరుణ హరిహరి నీ స్మరణ, నీ కరుణ హరిహరి నీ స్మరణ, హరియే భూషణం ధరా పోషణం, నీ రాధ భక్తి ప్రతి జీవికి ముక్తి సాధకం. ప్రభుని నామ చింతనే సదానందము, ఈ రాధభక్తి లోకానికి శాంతి పర్వతం, ఈ రాధభక్తి లోకానికి శాంతి పర్వతం, ఈ రాధభక్తి లోకానికి శాంతి పర్వతం.
That was a pretty short one. I'm sure none of them had time to go away anyway. You know, Arvind, you're talking about how perfection in communication, I think bloopers during talks can be a different, of course it can't be a satsang, but it can be a different session altogether.
A fun session.
Because, right, there's so many, one random thing I'm thinking of is, it's of course not a humor aspect of it, but the way, you know, with a surprise element, Swami can send a message across. I remember once Swami started a discourse by praising the students. Swami said, see, look at this gathering. So many of my students are here. And then Swami said, you pick any student from here. Pick even a first standard student. And our professor Anil Kumar sir was translating. And he usually kind of takes a particular tone and pitch based on what he thinks is Swami's theme. Hmm. So it apparently looked like Swami is going to praise the students. Okay, so he picked up that fervor in his translation. So he said, you can pick any student from our, you know, amongst our students, even a first standard student. Swami said, any student, even a first standard student is enough. And then Swami said, you ask him anything. So Anil Kumar sir was going higher, you know, you can ask anything. Swami will tell, they will be able to answer. And Anil Kumar sir was saying that they will be able to answer, and you know, his pitch usually sets the tone and gives the indication that you're supposed to clap here. So the whole audience broke into an applause and, you know, and they can answer anything. The next sentence that Swami said was so sharp and so, I'm sure it would have hit every student sitting there. Swami said, but not one of them practice the answer they can tell you. And you know, you can imagine the pin drop silence that was in the hall. But the way Swami built it and the way Swami drove that lesson, I think the way Swami communicates is a completely different theme altogether. But sometimes the humor with which Swami does it, you know, the sense of humor. I'm reminded of another beautiful incident where there was this student who was studying in the Vrindavan hostel then. For some reason, he said, you know, I have not lived a perfect life, like how Swami would expect a student to live. Because, you know, you always have students who are a little indisciplined, a little mischievous. I think that goes with the age. As I remember once, somebody went with a long list of complaints against students, which would happen quite often. One devotee went and complained to Swami, and Swami heard them through, and Swami just said one sentence. Swami said, boys will be boys, and walked away. So in a sense like that, you know, this boy was one of those mischievous kind. So he wrote a long letter to Swami, noting down all the mischief that he had done in the hostel. Kind of dedicating everything to Swami. He said, Swami, I've done all this thing.
A kind of a confession.
Right, confession letter. And he said, Swami, these are the things I've done. Henceforth, I want to be a good boy. I want to be Swami's student, the way Swami likes us to live. So I am offering all this at your feet. So please accept it and please give me the courage and the conviction to hold on to what the resolve I'm taking today. So he wrote this letter and he posted it to Swami because Swami was in Puttaparthi. And he felt a lot lighter and he was going about his life. A week or so later, who lands up suddenly, his father comes. And somebody comes and tells him, your father has come to meet you. So he's very surprised because it was a very odd time in the year and that's not a time when his parents visit him. So he's surprised, he goes there and his father is standing at the, you know, at the portico and he's looking a little angry. So he goes up to his father and says, father, what happened? You're so looking, I mean, I didn't expect you. So then father says, I'm coming from Parthi. So he says, oh, that's nice. Did you have good darshan? And his father says, I got an interview. So he says, that's so good. Then why are you looking so sad? Why are you looking so upset? You got an interview. He said, yes, but Swami told me about your letter. And at one moment, this boy's heart sank.
Oh, Swami had let him down.
Because he said, Swami has kind of broke the, you know, broken his trust. Because he's written a letter to Swami and it's the kind of things which he would never want to
share
with his parents. And here was Swami telling about his letter to his father. And his father saying, Swami told about your letter. And this boy with a sunken voice, he asked, what did Swami tell? And Swami told his father, and his father revealed, he said, Swami asked me, your son has no brains. What kind of nonsense does he write to me in his letter? So this boy's heart is in his mouth, wondering what Swami is told. And Swami tells his father, your stupid son writes to me that Swami, there is no salt in the chutney they are serving in the hostel. And in a moment, this boy didn't know whether to cry or to laugh, because definitely that's not what he has written in the letter. So Swami has kind of sent a live acknowledgement for the letter he has sent, and with the message, don't worry, whatever you reveal to me is a secret which will remain with me, but played a prank in a manner so that he gets the message. At the same time, he also knows that I've accepted whatever prayer you've made.
You know, Prem, this kind of incident that you're narrating, there are so many. I remember even Ravi Kumar sir narrating an episode from his life about that Kati Patang movie. I remember him narrating in public as to how when he was a student, he had secretly gone to the movie, and then he had, I'm just going through that episode quickly, when he was called into an interview along with his father, Swami says, tells him that, you know, you went to this movie, and Ravi Kumar sir denies it, and Swami says, shall I tell you the seat number? This was a movie, Kati Patang and all this. And he's so scared. Swami knows everything and he feels foolish about it, but Swami doesn't reveal a bit of it to his father, keeps up that sacred bond that exists between him and...
See, Swami, I think, sends off his father asking for somebody else in the samiti.
Exactly.
And that's when Swami starts this conversation.
And when he comes back, he praises Ravi Kumar sir. You know, I have found this to be a trait of Swami, where the communication, though it might seem indirect, is always direct. In the episode that you narrated, it appears as if Swami used the father as a medium and all that, but you know, he had no idea what was being communicated. The father never realized that Swami was sending him a message that all the confession that you have made in your letter, I have received it. This is something that is extremely private and only between Swami and the boy. And Swami is always like that. Though it might appear that there is somebody being used, the thing, the matter, the content is always one-to-one and private. Swami has never, you know, let down this pact of secrecy, if I can call it so, between anybody else. That is something only the avatar can achieve, because it is so one-to-one, so personal. This kind of omnifelicity, where you can have a one-to-one, personal, intense relationship with everyone, only the avatar can achieve. And that becomes more and more reinforced when I hear episodes like the one you narrated. Just changing the line of discussion, I remember one more kind of humorous episode that it is not actually a one-off. Many such episodes have happened in the Divine Presence. I'm narrating one or two of that just to highlight one important human condition that we all possibly suffer from. And this is how we try to highlight, and in order to highlight, okay, I shall not give up the lesson. Let me narrate it first. This so happened in Bhagwan's presence. There was this devotee, a devotee from the armed forces, because there Swami's devotees range in all spheres of influence. And this was a person from the army, from the armed forces. And he was narrating his episode, and he was recounting how during a battle situation, he had a close shave with death. And he wanted to narrate that Swami is the person who saved him from sure death on that day. And when he was narrating, he said, there were bullets whizzing past everywhere, and I did not know what to do, so I just took Swami's name. I said, Sai Ram, Swami, you protect me. And he said, and you know what happened? Miracle of miracles. The bullets hit my ADC and I survived. when he narrated it, of course he survived, but it made it look as if, you know, Swami is a vengeful God. You know, he killed the ADC in order to protect him. There was another episode of a person narrating an incident during a flood situation. And he said that, you know, when the floods came, he gathered all his family members at home and they started doing bhajans. And then, you know, he says that Bhagwan's blessings were such that all the trees fell on the neighbor's house. You know? It was a humorous situation, definitely, and I'm sure that the speaker, while speaking that, did not realize how he was actually apparently tarnishing Swami's image rather than highlighting it. In his need to highlight, he was overdoing it. But looking back at this incident, Prem, though again humorous, it is definitely, it evoked tremendous laughter when that blooper was committed in Swami's presence. Today when I look back at it, I realize that this is a serious human condition that it points to. The human condition where we need comparison to feel grateful in life. You know, for instance, if we take just these two examples, today I am alive. But do I celebrate the fact that I am alive? Do I feel thrilled that I am alive? Do I fall on my knees and tell Swami, thank you, I have got life? No. It is only when I see somebody around me dying that I fall on my knees and tell Swami, thank you that I have got life. If I see somebody being shot, I fall on my knee and say, Swami, thank you, I didn't get shot. It is when trees fall and destroy my neighbor's house, I tell Swami, thank you that I have got a roof on my head. Don't I have a roof on my head today? But did I express, let me be frank, I didn't thank Swami for a roof on my head today morning, Prem. Just because everyone else too has a roof on their head. That is the reason why we are not grateful every day in our life. That is the reason why we are not happy every day in our life, because we always compare. It is only when we either go very high or somebody around us goes very low that we are able to feel happy. That is very, very cheap happiness. Can't I celebrate the fact that my heart is beating and feel grateful to Swami? Do I need somebody around me to die of heart attack in order for me to express my gratitude to Swami that my heart is in good condition? Do I need to see somebody who is not able to walk in order to express my gratitude to Swami for my ability to walk? I mean, though this was humor that brought about laughter, it really pointed to a very pathetic human condition that we all suffer from, where we need to compare in order to feel happy. If only we can do away with comparison, we will realize, as Helen Keller said, you know, Helen Keller didn't have three organs of perception. She could not hear, she could not see, she could not speak. She could only taste and she could only feel. And yet she said, I don't have time to complain to God because I do not have sufficient time to express my gratitude to God for all the gifts given to me. If she could express her gratitude to God for gifts given, I'm sure, you know, there I go again, let me raise my hand. Again I'm making a comparison. I'm saying let us be, see if she can do it, why can't we do? Because she didn't have this, we are having it. Somehow it is so deeply ingrained in us that for us to feel happy, we need to compare. We need to get over this thing and be able to express our gratitude and thankfulness for so many blessings that are being bestowed on us every moment of our lives.
I mean, nothing more to add to that. It really is something which we need to think about. When we talk of Swami's humor, one thing is Swami's wit which comes out. The other thing is the way Swami is able to put it across, the way Swami can make a situation light. I mean, there are innumerable examples of that. But of course, what really stands out when we are talking of Swami's humor is Swami's ability to do something which not all of us can do. You know, that adds to Swami's ability to add a little more laughter and mirth to a situation. You know, you and I can crack a joke. We can at best be witty, but we can't tweak the forces of nature to bring about a funny situation, right? Mm. And I think that's what Swami can do. And that is what makes Swami a little more fun than probably any ordinary spiritual master or even any ordinary good, very funny friend can be. I remember one very beautiful and funny incident which was narrated by a very veteran devotee of Swami. I think this devotee can be named. His name is Ramabrahmam of Vrindavan. Hmm. Okay, and if you have seen pictures of his, he's a very well-built, tall gentleman because he's from one of these rural Andhra districts where those people are very well-built and, you know, they have a not just tall and fat, but as a body structure itself, it's quite hefty. Hmm. So he was a person who used to work in the fields and a very sturdy man. And he was one of those people, he was a caretaker of Vrindavan who had the access to Swami's bedrooms. He used to go and take instruction from Swami right in Swami's personal rooms. And he had this chance of doing Padaseva to Swami when Swami was going to sleep. So one day when he went to Swami's room, very casually Swami looked at him, picked up one of his robes and threw it at him.
Mm.
And Swami said, "Hey, Ram Ramam, Vesko, wear it." He said, "Okay," and this man is almost 6 feet tall and he could fit in three Swamis into him. That's how large he was. And Swami is giving this flimsy, thin, small robe of his and saying him, "Wear it." So he said, "Swami, there is no way I'll fit into it. You know, my hand also will not go into the hand and my head will not go into this neck. There is no way I can wear this." And Swami, you know, puts a very straight face and he says, "I am telling you, you will not follow my instruction. Wear it." So he said, "Swami, where do I begin?" You know, how do you, obviously obedience is something which is paramount for a devotee, but how do you obey an instruction as completely off logic as this?
Mm.
So he said, "Swami, how do I wear it? You know, how can I wear this?" And you know, he holds it against himself and he says, "Swami, there is no way I'm going to fit into this." And Swami says, "Nothing doing. I am telling you, you will not listen to me, you will not obey me, wear it." So he says, "All right, maybe Swami just wants me to tear this robe in trying to wear it." So, you know, he puts up his, you know, makes up his mind and starts wearing it, puts his hand inside and it's, you can imagine the funny situation which is there. And Swami is standing there and laughing and seeing this hefty man trying to fit into Swami's robe. The funny part is over. The profound part is many, many years later, Rama Brahma himself was to narrate this to devotees with tears in his eyes. Because even as he was wearing it, he realized that that robe was actually expanding to fit him.
Wow.
And by the time he completed the task, that robe which he held in his hand was actually a perfect fit for him and he was actually wearing that robe. That's when he was sharing it with the lesson that he learned. He said, "That day I learned that this Swami, whatever task he gives you, whether you know it or not, along with that task, he also gives you the ability to complete that task. He confers that ability to complete the task. I mean, you don't have to wonder whether I have the ability or not, whether I will be able to do it or not. He gives you that ability too."
You were speaking about a hefty devotee trying to put on a robe. I remember another such instance. Again, when I was in higher secondary school,
mm-hmm.
I saw this episode play out in front of me.
Okay.
There was this devotee who was again very stocky, well-built, quite on the heftier side. And Swami asked him, "What is it that you desire?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Swami, I just want to merge into you." And Swami said, "Look at yourself, look at me. How will you merge into me?" You know, again, everyone around laughed. The devotee also laughed. Smiling at the devotee, Swami then said something so beautiful, something mm-hmm. so profound. Swami said, "Become like me, then you will merge into me." You know, at that point in time, it felt as if Swami is telling him to slim down and become as petite like him. But if we just look a little deeper into the word, we realize Swami says, "Become like me, then you'll merge into me." We have to grow towards Swami. Many, many times Swami, you know, makes this little play on words, changing the same, and you know, at that moment it seems perfect for the situation, but later on you realize that those words had so much more impact. I remember when we used to call Swami to hostel, we used to say, "Swami, please come to hostel, Swami, please, Swami." It's actually the first set of boys will get up as Swami is passing by them in darshan and say, "Swami, please come to hostel." Swami will say, "Wait, wait, wait," and continue walking. Then the next group of boys will get up and tell, "Swami, please, Swami." The Swami will wait, "Swami, please, Swami, Swami, please, Swami." This would go on. And as they were saying this, Swami turned and said, "Boys, please, Swami. You please, Swami, and then Swami will come to the hostel," you know. It was the same word that Swami repeated. The boys are saying, "Please, Swami." Swami is also saying, "Please, Swami." But it makes so much meaning. So, it is mandatory that we grow up to Swami's stature, grow up to Swami's nature, more than stature, grow up to Swami's nature so that we achieve the ultimate goal in life. And when we are trying to grow to Swami's nature, it is not us who have to proclaim that we have become Swami. We are as good as Swami or we are nobody. I remember we had this satsang on how do we evaluate our spiritual progress.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of a 2-week satsang, we came to the conclusion that it is foolishness to even try to think as to how much we are progressing, what we are progressing. We just continue doing what we have to do. The Lord is the one who evaluates. We are nobody to evaluate. Another little anecdote that took place. This student, he was seated in the bhajan hall and Swami was speaking about how bad habits and evil tendencies sprout in the mind. He said that you may think that you have overcome everything. You think that you have overcome anger. You go to a forest, meditate for 5 years and you think you have overcome anger. It's easy to not get angry in the forest because there's nothing that will anger you. Come back and live among people, live among the diversity of people, the things that they do, and then you will see you will start getting angry again. Because all these evil tendencies in the mind, that soil that exists in the mind, you may remove these weeds, but the seeds are there waiting. The field will look barren, but the first few drops of rain that fall, and then you will see these weeds are again sprouting. So many times you will have to remove these weeds again and again, again and again, before your mind completely becomes barren of all these negative tendencies. Now this was what Swami was telling them in the bhajan hall. Suddenly Swami pointed to the student and said, "Hey, you've got bad thoughts." And then this boy tells Swami, "Yes Swami, there are bad thoughts, but don't worry, they're passing clouds, they'll come and go." And the minute he said this, Swami said, "Hey, that I should tell, that's my dialogue, you know, you don't steal away my lines." This was a nice little situation. And, you know, that is what I'm saying, that when we try to grow spiritually, we should not spend time evaluating ourselves. Don't, it is absolute arrogance to think that I have grown to that level, I have become this, I am this, I am this. It is wrong, I mean, to proclaim that. Because the person who should proclaim our growth is Swami. Swami should say, "You are my devotee." Swami should say, "Bangaru, there is no difference between you and me, you have grown to my level." So that is an important thing that we have to keep in mind, that our focus, our energy should be on our sadhana, on our efforts alone, not on the results, not on what we are achieving, not on what we are becoming, because what we think we are achieving doesn't matter. What Swami thinks is matter. It is Swami's dialogue to say that, "My child, you are evolved." It is not our dialogue, just as it was not that boy's dialogue to say, "My bad thoughts are passing clouds, they'll go, Swami." In the same way, it's not our dialogue to tell Swami that, "Swami, we have now evolved, we have now surrendered at your feet." It is Swami's dialogue to say, and that is one thing we have to keep in mind.
And I'm going to go back to what we started, I mean, we spoke about some time back where we were talking about Swami's communication. There's another very beautiful incident which Brother Indreshwar once narrated when we were talking to him. I think that conversation is still there on the radio. Those who are interested can look it up. No, where he was saying that after his 10th standard, his parents, the Rajmata of Jamnagar, was his grandmother, she was telling him that he should join the school in Puttaparthi. For some reason, he did not want to do that because he felt that, you know, he had a special relationship with Swami. Every time he came, they would get an interview and Swami knew him personally. He was having the idea, if I become a student, I'll become one in a thousand. You know, that you lose that speciality. So he was always scared of that. When he was talking to us, he said, retrospectively, he feels what a chance he would have lost if he had not joined. Because he felt that being a student is a completely different ball game. And as I said, when you get closer to Swami, the way you interact with Swami is so different, which is an incentive in a sense. So he was saying that initially he did not want to join. And in one of the occasions, he actually told Swami that he's not wanting to join. He would prefer to finish his schooling in wherever he was studying. So in one of the occasions, he told Swami that, "Swami, I'll do the studies and all that." But his grandmother was very keen that he should join. So one day when they were sitting in the interview room, she all of a sudden told Swami that, "Swami, what about Gopal? Will you take him in your school?"
Gopal Indreshwar.
Gopal Indreshwar was his name. So he felt, you know, why are they starting it all over again? I've already settled it with Swami. I've told Swami that I'm going to join the school. And so Swami said, "Oh, I have no problem. I am always ready to accept. But you know, he will not be able to adjust here. You know, here discipline is too much." So then Rajmata said, "No, no, Swami, he will be able to adjust. He's from an army school. He will be able to manage." And then Swami said, "No, no, see, discipline is okay. But here there is no non-vegetarian food." Because he was from a royal family and, you know, in the school where he was studying, they would serve non-vegetarian food in the menu itself. So then Rajmata said, "No problem, Swami, he will be able to manage. In just 2 years in Swami's school, he will be able to manage without eating." So Swami said, "No, no, see, in their school, they serve non-vegetarian food, but even that was not enough for him." Okay, and this boy was sitting and thinking all the things which was, you know, happening back in his school, because in his school menu, they had about 2 or 3 days in a week which they had non-vegetarian food. But what these boys would do, they would somehow get out of the school campus, jump across a wall, And depending on how much money they had managed to save, they would go to one particular hotel. There was a hotel called Hotel Reshma. So they would go there and have their extra dose of non-vegetarian food over there. Mm-hmm. And on days when they've not saved enough, they would go to another stall, which is like this bandi which you have here, right?
Push cart.
So there was one, I think Bharati fast food or something like that. So they would go there and have some, whatever he has to offer. So this is one mischief which they were indulging in very often. Okay. So Swami started telling that, you know, this boy, the food they give in the hostel is not enough. So they jump over the wall and he was thinking, oh God, Swami is revealing all my secrets. Okay. And then Swami, the way Swami put this incident, he said, since that food was not enough, our Gopal kabhi kabhi Reshma ke paas jata tha, kabhi kabhi Bharati ke paas jata tha.
Meaning at times he goes to Bharati, at times he goes to Reshma.
Okay.
And both are female names.
Female names. And Swami very purposefully kept the hotel and the food stall, whatever that thing is. The way Swami put it, it looked like this man, this little boy who was barely in his 11th standard, was getting into the wrong ways, going and visiting houses of ill repute. And that's it. Rajmata, the grandmother, no, she got up and she fell flat at Swami's feet. He said, Swami, I don't know what you'll do. You better take this fellow. He is getting spoiled and he is going into all these, and you know, all these Rajputs already have this bad habit. And this boy is getting spoiled. Swami, don't listen to him. Just take him. And Swami very sweetly looks at this boy. Kya Gopal, would you like to join our school?
Yes.
He said, Swami, no more. Don't tell anything more. Please take me in your school.
You see, this episode, so sweet, so beautiful. Ultimately, you know, I feel what matters is, what is Swami's intention behind all these jokes? It is not to put somebody down or, you know, make somebody look like a fool. It is always to draw people closer to himself. In the process, as you said, Indreshwar is so grateful that Swami pulled him into his fold. Otherwise, he would have missed out a great blessing in life. This has always been Swami's intention. And in that light, I'm reminded of another little episode that happened in the hostel. You know, every hostel has a stores, which is manned and taken care by the students for all the necessities that the students have. It might be slippers, books, chocolates, and some biscuits, some basic kind of provisions and other necessities. So, as part of the self-reliance, it is manned by the students. And the beautiful thing is, all of these have been started by Swami. The concept of self-reliance, that we should not have somebody else doing our work. So in the hostel, there are somebody who take care of the maintenance, somebody who takes care of cooking food for the sick boys, there are somebody else who takes care of the stores. Everybody is in part of some self-reliance department or the other. And, you know, those were the glorious days when Swami was going to inaugurate the stores, the hostel stores. So it was a great opportunity for the students who were part of the self-reliance department of managing the stores. So these 5-6 boys were very excited. And they were told that Swami would be there for a very short while. Though he'll come to inaugurate the stores, that is just a part of his agenda of the hostel visit.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore the inauguration would be done very quickly. So they said, please don't hold Swami for long because he has got other things to do. So the boys planned that, you know, as soon as Swami inaugurates, we will just, you know, in quotes, introduce ourselves as the stores boys and then quickly take Pad Namaskar. That's enough. So that was the plan. So Swami then comes that day and he inaugurates the stores. And after he inaugurates, there are these 5-6 boys, they stand in a row, in a line. They decide that quickly we'll all bend down, take one Namaskar each and move. So the first boy takes, the second boy takes, and the third boy or fourth boy, I don't know which one, he bends at Swami's feet and he's taking Pad Namaskar for so long. And Swami seems to be getting impatient, but Swami is looking at the boy down and looking at the other standing, looking at the boy down, looking at the other standing, and all of us are thinking, oh God, what happened to this boy? What is this fellow doing? He's supposed to take a quick Pad Namaskar. Now if we miss Pad Namaskar because of this boy, we'll never forgive him. All this is going on. And that boy is down for a good 10-15 seconds. And then when he comes up, he has got tears in his eyes, his nose is red, and he seems to be choked emotionally. And though the boys understand that, you know, taking Pad Namaskar can be a very moving experience, they are actually a little irritated with this boy because what he did, getting emotional at a wrong time, might cost them their chance of a beautiful proximity with Swami. Thankfully, Swami stands long enough for all of them to take Namaskar and nobody misses the Namaskar. And as Swami leaves, they look at this boy and say, brother, what were you thinking? What were you doing? You know, you almost cost us our chance at Swami's feet. And then this boy says, you know, I did not get emotional. He says, what do? I bend down to kiss his feet. My nose went between two of Swami's toes. The nose between the toes. And Swami held on to his nose with his toes. Held it tightly, firmly, and he says, I tried to get up, I'm not able to extract my nose from between his toes. And the more I pulled my nose, that's why, you know, my eyes started getting tears, my nose is red. And that is when the boys realized that Swami had played a sweet prank at this boy's expense, and this boy's nose was red, his eyes were having tears, and that is the reason why he had not got up for 15 seconds from Swami's feet. You know, looking back at this incident, just as you narrated the previous one, Swami cracked a joke to keep Indreshwar in his fold, at his feet. Here also, even at the cost of causing a little physical pain, Swami wants us to be at his feet. That is what this incident so clearly shows, I feel, you know. I might cause a few tears, I might cause a little pain, but dear child, I want you at my feet always. I know I might be like drawing too much of symbolism here, but I really feel that is how our Lord is. So therefore, let us not leave our Lord with some little pain that comes in our life, with the little tears that come in our life. Let us not make that as an excuse to tell, Swami, you are not helping me, I let go of you. In spite of all that, let us be at his feet, because Swami is like that. Even if it means a few tears and a little pain, he wants each one of us to be at his feet, because that is the greatest blessing we have received, and we should not fritter it away like that.
Even as you're saying this, when I think any of us listening to that would have loved to be in that boy's place in spite of the pain. And exactly. I think that is the beauty of the thing, you know, when an opportunity comes to get close to Swami, doesn't matter what is the path. Very often Swami would come and, you know, ask the warden, let's say he's looking for one particular student. Swami would rarely give out a name, you know, though we know that Swami knows all of us, and not just now, since ever. But always Swami would never give a name. You know, many times, I think some of my classmates, Swami would come and ask for them. There's one boy who's always smiling. So the warden will have to figure out, you know, who is that boy possibly Swami would have seen yesterday, and who fits this description. So many times it would often, Swami would say that there's one boy who sits behind this particular place every day, and he's, you know, does bhajan in this particular manner or something. Some particular description like that Swami would give, and the whole hostel would go into a frenzy trying to find out who that boy is. I remember one year, Swami came out and Swami said, there is one boy who comes and sits and sings bhajans. And the description which Swami gave was, he looks like a rakshasa. Swami said, there's one boy,
demon.
Right, rakshasalaga untadu, Swami said, okay. And imagine, that's all the description. He's a bhajan singer who looks like a rakshasa. And the warden comes to the hostel, calls all the bhajan singers, and he says, Swami is asking for a boy like this. And imagine, you can imagine, all of them say, sir, I look like a rakshasa, I look like a rakshasa. You know, that is where I said, when the chance comes to go close to Swami, none of us would have owned up to a description like that otherwise. And you can imagine that evening, about five or six boys were brought to Swami, and Swami picked out one boy. And even though it is something which you would not like to associate with, that boy was so happy that Swami thought of him in any manner. You know, in any manner Swami is thinking of you, and that gives so much joy. And I remember, I think in Sanskrit we have a lesson. The lesson is about Shiva Parvati Kalyanam. And how Shiva prepares for the wedding, you know, he says that so-and-so will come and officiate as the priest, and so-and-so will come and build the mandapam. He calls Vishwakarma to build the ceremonial mandapam and all that. So when it comes to who is going to officiate on the wedding, he invites the Saptarishis to come and perform the wedding. So he sends word for them, and that particular lesson in Sanskrit is about this conversation between the Saptarishis and Lord Shiva. So the Saptarishis start that lesson with this particular beautiful Sanskrit verse, which I don't know exactly what it is, but the meaning of that verse is, it is said that whoever thinks of Lord Shiva for one moment is blessed. In whose heart Lord Shiva appears as a thought, he is blessed. What can we tell about our fortune that we have appeared as a thought in Lord Shiva's head? You know, that is what it is, because at the end of the day, whether it is painful, whether it is a prank which is played on you, you are being made, your legs are being pulled, it just doesn't matter. At the end of it, Swami chose you for that. And Swami thought of you, and I think that's the thrill which takes over everything else.
Though we can go on with many more such humorous episodes that we have gathered, we have seen or we have experienced or we have heard, for the sake of completion, I just want to share one little experience. I was one day sitting on one of the beautiful Konkan beaches that mm-hmm. in India, and I was seeing this little child on the beach. He was digging. He was digging and digging on the sand. And he had his tools, his little tub, plastic things that with which he'll plan to make something. I did not understand what he was doing. I kept looking at him. And then after digging out enough sand, he started shaping the sand. And though it was not a very professional work, I could understand that he was trying to make a kind of a sand castle.
Mm-hmm.
And the sand castle was being made. And as the sand castle was being made, the time passed, the day grew on, the high tide came in. Because of the high tide, there was a chance that sometimes the water might come up to his castle and wipe it off. So this child then dug some more sand and he built almost like a 1 foot sand wall on the other side of his castle. I was really lost in admiration for this child because doing so much, so beautifully, so perfectly. And therefore now the water is coming, and as I said, it's only the end part of the wave. So it's not as if like a huge tide is coming and wiping it out. It's the end part of the wave, which was now being effectively stopped by this little wall that he had built. And therefore, that castle was being protected. And as he solved that problem, and then he went back to giving final shape for the castle. He made a kind of a gate for the castle, a little secret tunnel kind of thing. And it was really fascinating. But then something absolutely shocking happened. After he finished this whole thing, he got up and he must have spent 40-45 minutes working on this whole thing. At the end of it, his mother calls out to him and says, yeah, it's time to go, it's time to leave. So he gets up and his mother says, come, come fast. He walks a little towards her. He has picked up his tools in the hand and his mother says, come. He's turning back looking at it and I felt, yeah, he's got so attached, you know, he's missing. Okay, he has made such a beautiful thing, now he has to leave it and go away. Even as I'm thinking this, I realized that I was totally wrong, because what this child did was just put his tools down next to him, then ran towards the castle that he had built, jumped and then just kicked it. Kicked it and thrashed about it wildly. And I was shocked. You know, here you built that kind of a 1 foot sand barrage to prevent the water from coming and damaging your castle. But at the end of it, what are you doing? This is so stupid. This is so crazy. You are stupid. This is what you are foolish. This is what I'm thinking. But then you look at the child having a big smile on the face. And he shouts to his mother, mother, I'm coming. I had fun. And he walks away. And then I thought, what was this fun? I don't understand, because it seems so meaningless, right? It seemed so meaningless. What did you do the whole thing for then? Now this little incident, you know, I was thinking possibly this is how we look at God also and feel that maybe God is foolish. But the divine child is always playing in the sands of time, creating, protecting, and ultimately destroying also. And it's all just for fun. Possibly there's no meaning in that. It's just done for fun. And because, you know, Swami says in the beginning, there was nobody to love. I separated myself from myself so that I can love myself, so that I can have fun, so that I can enjoy. And that's what Swami says also, Ananda Balude, Ananda Balude. I have come down to mingle and have fun. We should not misunderstand the fun over here. Fun is not the way we trivialize fun, but nothing in life is worth taking so seriously. They say that angels fly in the sky because they know how to take themselves lightly. I also hear another quote which says that all the great truths in life are actually a joke. And some of the jokes in life are the greatest of truths. It is possible that everything that the Lord does, it's not as if something is humorous, something is not. Everything that the Lord does is out of fun. Everything is therefore called a leela. You know, there's no perfect description for that Sanskrit word, but leela is actually playfulness, activity that is done with playfulness, with an element of prank, with an element of fun, with an element of symbolic profundity. It has everything in it, and everything is encapsulated in the word called leela. We don't have a translation for it, and that is why whatever the Lord does is called a leela, because it is a leela. Everything is for fun in that sense. Creation, preservation, destruction. Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara. Generator, organizer, destroyer. G-O-D. God stands for fun.
I think that in endless stories which we can keep talking when we talk about this, this is just a very, very short collection, I'm sure. And as we said, humorous incidences in Swami's presence, that's a totally different topic altogether. The way Swami would, with so much ease, manage difficult situations, Swami would, I think at one point Swami had even told, there is a special yoga that you have to learn. And Swami said, that is the knack yoga. And Swami would say, you know, the sayings like, always speak obligingly. How to get yourself out of difficult situations. Swami has taught all these through his wit, through his humor. And that is why every aspect of Swami, even when he is not teaching, he's teaching. So there is never a point when he is not teaching. Even when he is not giving a message, he's really giving a message. That is why Swami said, my life itself is my message. I don't have to stop and say, from this point, the message starts. Because there is no point where there is no message. And that is why even when talking about Swami's humor and wit, we really can learn so much. And dear listeners, thank you so much for being a part of this fun ride. And we are sure you all would have enjoyed it. If you have any thoughts to share about this, if you have any comments, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Most humbly, we offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet.
Sai Ram, you just heard an episode of our radio program, Afternoon Satsang. This is a segment of Radio Sai's Thursday Live, hosted by Prem and Arvind from Team Radio Sai at 12:30 p.m. Indian Standard Time on Thursdays, only on Asia stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. Today's episode was first broadcast live on 25th June 2015. Dear listeners, we hope you like this program. As always, you can send us your feedback to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and loving Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam.